The rollout of this vision of a arts and culture district for Bonanza Park. I have City Manager Diane Foster along with Nate Rockwood, usually the city's budget manager, but in this case he's been named as project manager. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's talk first about that, Diane. Usually Dave Gustafson, your project manager guy. So why Nate, your numbers guy in this situation?
Dave does manage a lot of projects for the city, although Dave does typically manage it later on in the process, the actual construction process. So while I don't think Nate will be actually managing any construction, he will be heavily involved in that. Nate took on the role of Nate's background includes a master's in public administration. He is actually a history major, and he's got actually a quite diverse skill set. And so he was pretty much the perfect person for this because we needed to figure out not only partners and how we would do this, but the funding piece was incredibly important. So we took all of Nate's skill sets and put them into action on this one.
So, Nate, I think you were also the one who figured out that we have not used this 1% municipal transit room tax and were the one who actually proposed it.
Yeah, this is one that we've really known that we've had the ability to do, but we've always been looking for the right moment to use it. It's one of the unique taxes where the visitor pays the full amount of the tax, and so the city council itself just votes on the tax. There's no ballot initiative. And so we really wanted to make sure that when we did use this tax that it was going towards a project that really benefited the community and benefited the city as a whole.
Yeah, there had to be numerous times, though, then you were kind of like biting at the bit here to think that we could use it. Why do you think this makes it the right project to do that?
I think it makes sense because of the benefit that it brings back to the community, and it also benefits all the visitors. I think it is an amenity that's added to the community. That's one more reason why people would come to Park City, one more reason why people stay in Park City and love Park City. I looked at a lot of different models on trying to figure out how to do some sort of tax increment financing using the property values or the sales tax values to make this district work. But with such a strong nonprofit emphasis there with the Kimball and the Sundance, you could never get those to pencil without putting in tons of overnight high-end condo type things, and that's exactly what we didn't want to do. And so that's why this actually made sense to use this type of funding source.
Yeah. Now, there is some concern from the Lodging Association that they understand certainly Sundance Film Festival brings a huge economic benefit to the town, but they're still struggling with how does the Kimball Arts Center do that?
Well, I was listening to that story this morning, and we appreciate the partnership with the Lodging Association, and we actually don't expect we expect there are going to be concerns in this process, and that's why we're really just kicking it off at this point. And we do welcome people to come and talk to us about concerns and see if there are things that we can either mitigate or make better. With that, though, I do think Kimball is an attraction. You know, I was talking to one of the longtime general managers and someone who's been prominent at the Chamber of Commerce as well the other day about this, and he has a high-end property, and he said, we can handle the 1%, and we've heard from a lot of lodging associations. It's a lot of the lodging association. They don't, as you heard Rhonda Sodera say, it might. Group businesses do look at this. They didn't think, though, for a lot of their particularly individual travel, it would affect their business. However, this GM said, you know, it'll be great to have Kimball where people can go on a rainy day, or the spouse, significant other, or kids who don't ski have an opportunity to go do something. And while I think there are actually people who do plan their visits around the Arts Festival, which is Kimball's signature event, I do think in the future Kimball will grow and change to the point that it will be a major attraction in the community. And the idea is that we're bringing people to the Arts and Culture District, so there'll be a lot for people there, and it'll be complementary to the ski industry.
Yeah, so back to this notion about the possibility of losing some of our larger group functions. I mean, has any analysis been done in terms of how that would impact us if we were to lose 2, 5, 10% of the group business as a result of the increased taxes?
I think you can probably see an equivalent. I don't think we'll see a significant amount of group business leave because of a 1% tax. Actually, if you were to look at the chamber has the exact numbers, but as I understand it, there was basically around a 1% increase in lodging occupancy this year. I think we heard Allison Kulo talking about that last year. However, they had double-digit growth in the revenue this year, which means that they increased room rates above 1%. And I don't think that hurt the community at all, and I don't think that hurt the lodging properties. During the recession, there was a lot of group business that fell off. Now, a significant amount of that has come back. But I don't think most properties are looking at major losses to group business. It's just another competitive point.
So another concern from the Lodging Association, Nate, is that the 1% tax, I mean, as proposed, is forever. Are there any plans to keep this in place or to remove it once we get this paid for and built out?
The city council always has the ability to rescind a tax. We're putting this tax in place, issuing a 15-year bond on it, and then we'll be going through the process of designing that area and then also looking at how we connect that area to other areas. I think this tax being in place does a lot of things towards connecting that area and potentially ultimately will be funds that can go into improving some of the other areas in town. But as I said, you know, once those bonds are retired off, a city council can always make a decision to no longer charge that tax.
Yeah, and in terms of the max, this is the max that Park City could charge, yeah?
Correct.
Summit County, though, has some leeway in that. We could see the county increase its transit room tax if they wanted?
Yeah, the Summit County is at 3%. The amount that counties are allowed to go up to is 4.25%, so there is a little capacity within the county side of the TRT. At this point, we haven't heard anything from the county indicating that they're looking at raising their TRT, but that's certainly something that they could consider in the future.
Yeah. Another concern from the Lodging Association, they want to ensure that the Sundance Film Festival stays around. Just because the Institute has its headquarters in this art and culture district doesn't guarantee that the film festival stays. So how do we make sure that that happens?
This was actually a request by Sundance. They had a number when they came back to us and sat down with us. They had a number of requests. None of them were showstoppers, and one was that they did want to talk about the contract. The current contract goes through 2022 with a possible extension to 2026. You heard Nate and the mayor and other people during this process talk to Sundance about how this is very much a city's commitment to you. And we've also heard from the Lodging Association that they would like the city to relook at the Sundance contract to make it longer. So where we have a convergence of folks who want to make it longer, we're willing to talk to Sundance about that. We did, however, through this process, point out that there's not a lot of more cash that the city can throw at this, that the city does make a significant contribution both in kind and through other means for this festival. So we're happy to look at extending it, and we believe that that's something city council is interested in.
So you're the numbers guy, Nate. Do it. Help me out here. So we're 15-year bond at estimated to raise about $2.4 million each year. So how much money would this raise? I mean, how much would come to the city then?
Over 15 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're looking at probably, we won't bond against it all. One of the things that we do with all of our bonds is that we'll never allow debt on a single revenue source go beyond 65% of that revenue source. So if you issued a debt against a 15-year bond on the 2.2, you would be in the $22, $24 million range. But that said, you would still have that other percentage of cash coming in that could also be pushed into the project or help that project along.
Right. So we had heard that you're going to take from the sale of the development lots from Kimball and Sundance, estimated at about $7 million, you're going to then put that into a transit node.
Yeah.
And that's what that's estimated to cost? We're talking about some underground parking, structured parking?
Yeah, so actually the estimated cost for a parking stall in Park City is about $30,000 a stall. And so when you look at the number that we need in there of a combination of below ground and above ground, we're looking at about $14 million in parking and in the transit center in that area. And as that gets designed out, we'll know exactly how that works. Obviously, if you put some more surface parking, you could lower that number. And as there's more underground parking, that number could go up. But we're looking at about $14 million being put into that.
Property owner has often said that there's not tailings in the area, even though it's part of the kind of that, I think, the district. Do we know that? I mean, have we done due diligence?
So the due diligence is built into the contract that Deputy City Attorney Tom Daly has negotiated along with Nate, and there's a whole process in there. We do know on this particular piece of property that the property owner, Mark Fisher, and we very much appreciate the partnership with Mark on this, that he's gone through what are called phase one and phase two analysis. Phase one is where you go through and you look at all the history of the property and all the documentation. Phase two is actually when you go in and do soil testing. Now, that being said, Nate, we've actually talked about this. Nate has put into the budget some contingencies just in case as you dig down and, you know, this is an area where there was a rail yard. So we need to make sure we've got the taxpayer covered.
The plans also call for as much as 90,000 square feet of retail, office space, housing space. Can you give us a better idea of really what that includes, Nate?
Well, what we want that to include is buildings that support this concept of the arts and culture area. So a big part of our planning process will really be looking at other arts and culture areas around the country, figuring out what makes them work, what type of concepts we can put into this one that will make this one work. We know that Kimball and Sundance on their own are huge anchors, but they're not going to make the whole area just work exactly how we want. So we want to be really careful that we put a good mix. We want to get a good live-work feel in there, but we also want to get a place where the locals, visitors, anybody comes there, feels like there's different amenities that can serve their needs. And so we're at the beginning point of doing that, but that's the plan going forward.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Mayor Jack Thomas, an architect, a little bit more about just the aesthetic of it all tomorrow morning. But in terms of what we heard Thursday was that the city would be able then be in the position to start offering discounted rents to places like maybe Anaya's Market or to nonprofit organizations. I'm a fan of Anaya's, but why would that business get, you know, some kind of help from city tax dollars?
Well, I think one of the concerns with Anaya's, and obviously there's outreach that's been done to the owner of that business, and I think if not in that spot, then another spot in the city. It is a gathering spot. It does serve not only the Latino community but the whole community, and having grocery stores in town are things that are important to any city. So I very much think you'll see the city talk to we're actually talking to all the businesses in that area and seeing are there opportunities for them. We've heard from the Maverick that they wanted, when they build a new station, they basically want an acre or an acre and a quarter, something like that. So they build out their full mini mart and everything else. Well, that's probably not possible within city limits. And I heard Mayor Jack Thomas talking the other day about, well, maybe you see in a lot of cities really compact fueling stations. And also the other thing that you will see, I would imagine, particularly where you have folks like Volvo coming out and saying in 2014 or a couple years from now they're going to be building only electric cars, is you'll see a lot more electric infrastructure in that area. I think when we really look at all of this, though, is we really are in some ways at the start of this process. And so the community input is going to be incredibly important to city council as far as what, you know, Nate talked about the importance of a mix, and I completely agree with that. You need restaurants and retail and a lot of things going on in there. City council, part of the reason they got into this and part of the reason why the transient room tax makes sense is that we don't have to maximize the density in that area, so it can have a better feel, more walkability, connectivity. And we're going to need the public to come out and talk to us about What do they think about offering reduced rents? Is there some type of program where the first couple of years a new artist could have a reduced rent and then it scales up over time, as we've done with some events in the community? So those are all open and opportunities. We've heard City Council talk about an interest in some nonprofit space in there as well. Obviously, there's not enough to fit all of the wonderful nonprofits we have in the community. However, I think there's going to be interest in that as well.
So we're going to start the process tomorrow. A special City Council meeting has been scheduled for when and where?
It is actually scheduled as a City Council meeting, and the reason was is that we thought that a majority of City Council will want to attend that. What that will be is it starts at 5 o'clock at the Park City Library in the community room. We do also have the Santee Auditorium reserved just in case it's raining and a lot of people come out, although we really hope for a good turnout. Mayor Jack Thomas, early, I would expect sometime between 5:10 and 5:30, will do an actual presentation. So sometimes we do these as open houses. This one will be a combination of a formal presentation. We'll show some slides and some concepts. Obviously, nothing set in stone at this point. And then afterwards, we'll have representatives of Sundance and Kimball Arts Center there, as well as City Council and staff. And we're going to break out. Instead of doing a formal Q&A, we're going to do a breakout so people can get any questions answered by lots of different folks. And we'll have some boards there showing renderings and things like that. And it'll be more informal after the initial formal presentation.
No votes, though, scheduled to happen.
No votes scheduled to happen. Nate does have this, and you'll see a packet come out today, late in the day, sometime between 4 and 5 o'clock today. The City Council packet will come out, and I'll let Nate talk to that.
Yeah, so we'll have the City Council packet come out. That's going to include a description of the project and the process that we've gone through to get to this point. It'll also detail both of the letter of intents that have been signed between Kimball Art and the city and Sundance in the city. It'll have the purchase agreement that the city's moving forward on, and it'll also have the documentation needed to adopt the TRT. The plan for this week is to discuss all those items, review all those items, and if council wishes, continue that to the next week, where they would then adopt each one of those items, and we would kind of be on our way at that point.
Okay.
It is. I do want to add just one thing, though, is although, and Nate pointed out correctly, that those letters of intent have been signed by the city and by the respective parties, and the real estate purchase contract is signed, none of them are actually formally, they don't take real life until City Council votes and adopts those. So that'll be on the 13th. We hope people show up for that too. We've got them agendized right after a Courchevel discussion. So I would expect by 6:30 we'll be talking about those at Council on Thursday.
Okay. Diane and Nate, thanks for your time. Well, recently the Historic Park City Alliance reviewed some proposed guidelines for limiting and preventing chain stores on Park City's Main Street, as well as another look at the public plaza there at the top of Main Street. In the studio with an update, I have the Executive Director of Historic Park City Alliance, Michael Burrell. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, so where are we with the chain store discussion? I know you guys spent quite a bit of time at the last meeting discussing it.
We did spend some time reviewing a proposed draft ordinance and trying to formulate some positions. We've, for a while, had a position statement on a tenant mix on the street, which deals with a number of things, but chain-based or formula-based businesses is one of those. So we did discuss this ordinance. It's currently, as we understand it, being proposed as a cap that would be done as a number or a percentage of the overall storefronts. And our membership thus far is very supportive of the idea of pursuing that type of an ordinance. And I think that's largely based in the understanding that our true competitive advantage as a commercial district is the fact that we have this authentic historic character that is different from a resort base or a lifestyle center or a shopping mall or the places that people visit our district from. And being able to maintain that is really important to our long-term economic health.
Yeah, there was also discussion, though. I mean, are we just talking old Main Street, or are we talking about the entire length of Main Street?
Yeah, I think that's to be determined still. For sure, the focus is on the historic district, and the discussion was, is there a reason to allow some additional flexibility on Lower Main to help it achieve some more vibrancy? Is there a different sort of ratio or percentage that would make sense there? And so I think the staff decided that it might be interesting to take a look at a similar policy but with a different ratio, and they were going to study that and bring some alternatives back.
Right. And then do real estate chains, or do they count?
Yeah, I think that'll be an interesting one to see come through the process as well. I don't believe that our membership had a strong opinion on that particular item. It might be a little early in the discussion for us to have studied those details. I think the real estate community brings up the interesting counterpoint that they are already regulated from ground floor spaces with a separate ordinance. And so are two ordinances really necessary to achieve that or not? And it takes a little unraveling, I think, to figure that piece out.
So we already have like 14 chain stores. We've got Harley Davidson, Lululemon, Roots, The North Face, and the three real estate chains. So when we talk about capping, I mean, what are some of the numbers that are being discussed?
Yeah, I think the numbers are somewhere in the 8 to 10 range, or sometimes they've gone as high as 15. So you know, we're still looking to see where council wants to zero in on that number. I think the idea would be to try to keep it fairly low, at least for now, and be able to prevent there being a wholesale turnover, and to sort of, again, maintain that authentic experience where you don't experience a brand or a sign or a product that you see in every other location, every third or fourth storefront, so that as you walk along the street, it really still reads as a historic downtown with a collection of local businesses. And so I think that's the goal of our membership as well, is to maintain that authenticity. I think the other piece of it is that by doing it as a cap, it allows us to recognize those existing chains as existing partners in our community, and some of them are very vital parts of our commercial district already, and to embrace them and to sort of be able to create synergies where some of the chains and their marketing budgets and the brand identities they have can help attract people to our district, and at the same point the local businesses can kind of teach them how do you become integrated with the community, how do you provide good service and information that people want to have when they come to a destination, how do we partner with our local events and nonprofits that are important parts of our community as well.
So what we're trying to do here is to look, I mean, a fear that we become just like every place else. Is that what we're trying to avoid here?
Yeah, I think it really is that sort of homogenization effect and trying to, again, make sure that your experience when you come to downtown Park City is different than the other places that you might go through the course of the year, and that the products that you find and the service that you experience is different as well.
Yeah, so the numbers you threw out, 8, 10, 15, is that percent then that you're looking at?
Again, the city staff is really kind of delving into whether that's a percentage or a hard number cap. I think their preference would be to have it as a hard number so that they've it's a little easier to say, well, we've achieved that number or we haven't.
So as a planner, do you agree with how Park City is doing this? Because basically we're talking about limiting the amount of storefront, but you think they're taking it a step further by capping it? That's where we're headed here?
That's where it looks like Okay. We're headed from the information that we've discussed thus far with the city. And as a planner, yeah, I think Utah is an interesting environment to operate within, and there are lots of sort of legal limitations on how you can regulate, particularly free market economies. And so the idea of looking at how to keep it consistent with the historic character of our buildings, the sizes of our storefronts, and using that as the basis is probably makes a lot of sense.
So is the city waiting for a recommendation from the HPCA?
I don't know that they're waiting on us, but we're going to provide a revised position statement on tenant mix, and it will include many of the elements that we've just discussed.
So when do you do that?
We'll probably issue something within the next week or 2 weeks at the very most.
All right, let's move over to the plaza top of Main Street. I think we're getting away from calling it the Brew Pub Plaza. The Main Street Plaza, is that accurate?
Sure.
Certainly we've heard some concerns from residents there. What about businesses? I mean, they want the vibrancy there.
They do, in fact. And I think, you know, a lot of the support for some of the additional tax increment that is funding improvements along Main Street was with the idea that we would fund things that create added vibrancy to the Main Street district, and that allow us, when we have special events, to have spaces to sort of base those events rather than always closing parking and closing the street and limiting the access to the existing businesses. So that's, I think, the key piece that we want to see maintained in the design for that plaza, is the ability to really program it and have it as a space that can be used for events where it's synergistic with our sidewalks and our local business storefronts, rather than something where it's just a passive pocket park where we already have those kinds of elements with Miners Park or the Bear Bench and those kind of elements on the street.
Yeah, but it still was heartbreaking to hear, you know, Carol Fontana, you know, a 40-year resident at least up there, to say how this will possibly impact, I mean, her quality of life.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the complaints that I've heard from local residents has been on sort of traffic circulation and the fact that we already have some existing issues with the improvements that were made to Hillside and some of the other street improvements. And is there a way to sort of minimize the amount of taxi circulation, service trips to businesses that loop around through neighborhood areas? And to me, I think there are ways to address that through transportation policy, through management of special events where those impacts are intensified, so that we're managing what's creating really the impact rather than trying to do it by limiting an asset to the street that's been planned for years.
Do you guys, have you taken a position on terms of just the one way or?
Yeah, I think our membership certainly supports the idea that there ought to be a one-way access there, and that it ought to be used for events rather than used every day. And again, that's so that we maintain that continuity of pedestrian experience as you're walking up towards the top of the street, that if we're trying to create a bit of a draw there, whether that's passive during most times or programmed during events, that we don't interrupt that with a major street crossing or a dangerous pedestrian situation like we have at some of the cross streets now where you can't see around corners. So, I think we would like to see that be more of an event specific or used to handle circulation when flow becomes an issue.
Yeah. But back to Carol's concerns just about noise and mm-hmm. music and live music. I mean, how often is that something that she, you know, needs to look forward to?
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, it'll depend on how it's programmed. But I think the vision has never been that it's a rock concert venue, but more that it's just another nice amenity at the top of the street where occasionally there might be some programmed quiet music. But again, it gives us a space for events we already have where there are already impacts to sort of pull those out of the street and provide a venue for them that is less impactful to the commercial district.
Okay. How's summer going in general? What are you hearing from folks?
I think most people are pretty happy. I mean, the lodging numbers are looking fairly steady, and it's nice to see the sidewalk projects getting completed, and hopefully we'll be done with most of those improvements by mid to late summer, and be able to enjoy some years without heavy projects on at least the main part of Main Street. We know we've got some things in Sweet Alley coming in the years to come, and as well as the plaza we just discussed, but thus far it's been a good summer.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Only that I think we've got also, our long-term approach is always to understand what it takes to remain vibrant, to remain a positive place for people to visit, to be an integral retail, commercial, entertainment district, which is what I just heard described for the new Bonanza Park area. And so I think we've got some long-term visioning to do with our membership, as well as some negotiations with the city to kind of understand what their vision is for differentiating those two areas and making sure that it's not just another competitive area that we've got to understand how we remain relevant. So I think that'll be an interesting discussion as we go forward.
All right. When do you guys meet next?
Our next membership meeting is going to actually be for all of our members rather than just our board, and it's planned for later this month. And it'll usually be a 4 to 6 in the evening where we'll invite all of our businesses. So I'd love to come back once we have that set and talk to you about that.
Okay. Michael, thanks for coming in in this morning.
Thank you.
Michael Brill is the Executive Director of the Historic Park City Alliance. It's KPCW. Looking to sustain and grow Summit County's art and culture, a new initiative to support the financial backing of local nonprofit art organizations is getting off the ground. In the studio with an update, I have Jake McIntyre. He's been hired as the project manager for Project ABC, along with Mary Beth Maziarz, a local musician and singer and chair of the Project ABC Creative Sector Work Group. Good morning to both of you.
Hi, Leslie.
Good morning.
Jake, we'll begin with you, and maybe you can just give us a review of what Project ABC is.
Yeah, so Project ABC stands for Art, Beauty, Culture. Is essentially about charting a course for the future of arts and culture in Summit County. So we're looking at what's going on today, what we want to be going on in the future, and how we get there.
So what are you doing about it?
So the next couple of months are really about data collection, listening, and just spreading awareness for arts and culture in the community in general. So we have various different ways for people to get involved in terms of providing ideas and support. We're launching a survey today that will go live on our website, projectabcscforsummitcounty.com. So that's going to be a great way for people to be able to get involved and share their thoughts and ideas about the current future state of arts and culture.
So when you talk about collecting data, what is it that you're looking for?
So we're looking for everything from what's going on today, how things are funded potentially, what different people throughout the county are working on, as well as what ideas individual citizens, artists, arts organizations, government entities, what they have in mind for the short and long term, and what we can do to help find common goals and move towards those common goals.
Yeah. So Mary Beth, how is the work group that you're chairing helping with this endeavor?
Well, even all morning hearing about the arts and culture things that are happening in town and BOPA and our big news around here, it's kind of this really critical time where there have been all these disparate groups and individual artists who've been doing their own thing, artisans, creating stuff, selling stuff, but there hasn't really been an effective communication unification of all these folks, or kind of some way for them all to know what's happening and to be able to help promote each other. And so the creative work group, our thing is to not only collect ideas from all these places where many artisans and creators have visited and see how are they doing it in Austin? What's Breck Creates about in Breckenridge? Like, talk about all the different places and how they've affected change and kind of a great creative space in their communities. But how does it really fit into who we are? How does it fit into Park City, where our history and where we're going? And so our job is, from the artist's point of view, from the musician's point of view, what do we need? What can we create? And what do we have that we can show as our strength?
Well, I was kind of questioning you both just in terms of, with this announcement of a new arts and culture district, that's something that you have not been brought into. I think you were given a heads up that it was going to be announced. But are there now competing interests here, or is it some redundancy with what Park City's doing as opposed to what the Arts Council's doing?
I think it's actually a terrific sign that both the facilities are coming into place as well as the conceptual side of it. And we're not related at the moment, but you're right. There was a nice heads up, and my hope is that there will be some terrific synergy between this conceptual side of what Project ABC is doing and then the actual nuts and bolts of where it happens, what happens, when it's happening in the district and all through the county.
Yeah. So at this point, you haven't been invited. I guess you'll learn, just like everybody else does, a little bit more about it tomorrow.
I'm going to be there.
Yeah, and I will add that it's really exciting to see that demonstration from the city that arts and culture is important to life here, and that this arts and culture district will be likely a very important piece of the puzzle of what Project ABC looks to accomplish, but it is only one piece of the overall puzzle, and we're looking larger and more holistically than sort of what any one district can accomplish.
Yeah, and in terms of the financial backing of all of this, I mean, I think that was your original goal, is how do we bring more money into creating arts and culture within the county? It sounds like they have a proposal to do that, they're increasing the transient room tax. Do we need to go forward, though, with an additional funding mechanism?
I think it's too early to say exactly what's going to come out in terms of recommendations related to funding, but What I will say is that we're working as part of this data finding process over the next couple of months is understanding really how current arts and culture funding works locally, but then also at precedents from around the state and around the country, and then maybe where are some needs and what possibilities do we need to be able to increase, and if we do need to increase things, how can we get creative and collaborative about potential resource pooling or looking at fundraising in a different way than it has been before. So.
Yeah, and I might add, too, that my understanding was that that wasn't a huge initial, like, primary goal. It was not about raising more funds, collecting more money. It's more about using our resources creatively and wisely and making sure that there aren't, like, redoubling of efforts, that one person isn't putting out this big calendar. These people aren't building sites here that could all have some kind of natural funnel where we could be helping each other and utilizing resources really effectively.
Yeah, so there is a petition out there. I see representatives of the Arts Council out here and there. What is the petition asking for?
Yeah, so what we're calling this is a pledge, but it's a non-monetary pledge. We think of it as just a sort of high five to arts and culture. And what we're thinking of it as is, you know, give us your name, email address, and zip code, so we can kind of track throughout the county where support's coming from. And it is just that. It's a way for people to give a high five to arts and culture, say, yes, I care about it, I'm an advocate, and I think an intentional planning process is a good way to spend time and resources. As it sits right now, we have just over 800 people over the last month and a half or so that have sort of raised their hand and said, yes, arts and culture matters to us. And that pledge is available on our website. And then we're also sort of canvassing or tabling it events throughout the summer.
Okay. So where are we then in the process? You're going to do this and then you had hoped to do some kind of community-wide, I guess, just say, look at what we found this fall?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll be looking at that sort of fall, tentatively looking at middle to late October. Mm-hmm. But some of that will depend on how the data collection goes, what we find, and how long we need to be able to gather all of that. But that's the timeline right now. So right now is about listening and learning and spreading awareness.
And I might also add that as well as being a data collection point and a summit where people can share kind of their feelings and their support and their concerns about the role of art and culture, we're also trying to do some really concrete small victories, like what needs to happen that's not happening. Is it like a weekly literary reading? Is it a poetry slam? Is it an open mic night? Is it rehearsal spaces? Like, what are some things that would really, on a weekly, on a daily basis, affect the artists and artisans of this area and the people who want to support them and go listen to them or experience their art? And so that at the end of it, it's not just a big discussion. It's actually like something that hopefully really improves the process for a lot of folks.
All right. The website, projectabcsc.com, is live, ready to
It is live, and the survey's up there now, but we'll be sending it out through our newsletter this afternoon as well.
Okay. Anything else, you two?
No, thank you for having us,
Leslie.
Okay. Jake McIntyre and Mary Beth Maziarz with Summit County, Park City Summit County Arts Council. You're listening